to me, and that's true. You know, I before I got here, in fact, some of my first memories are memories of, you know, my relationship with a higher power. You know, I grew up with a with an understanding of a higher power, and with prayer and belief and all those kinds of things, and I grew up with knowing that prayer worked. And you know, a couple of things I can think of is, you know, I was probably about 6 years old, and I had lost my glasses. I've worn glasses since I was three, and it was sort of an ongoing thing that I would lose them, and I'd be like restricted to my room till I found them, because I was always losing them. And you know, I remember being in my room and praying, you know, God, let me find my glasses, and I would find them, you know. And another time, we were living in San Francisco, and my mom and I were driving across the Bay Bridge, and we ran out of gas about midway over the Bay Bridge, and she said, you know, it was scary. We're in this big Volkswagen bus, and the wind blows, and the wind was blowing, and the bus is moving, and the bridge is moving, and you know, she was scared, and because she was scared, I was scared. And she said, Lisa, we need to pray. And you know, so I remember praying, and what I remember is a gas truck stopped and filled up the tank. Now, I don't remember, you know, that's my memory of what happened. But, you know, I knew from a very young age that if you ask, that God answers. And what happened for me along the way is that, you know, I didn't feel like I was good enough, and I didn't feel like I fit in, and we moved around a lot, and I just wanted to belong. And, you know, what happened is I found a way to belong, and I found a way that no matter where I went, you know, you'd move and the neighborhood would change, and the school would change, and, you know, what to wear would change. And as soon as I'd get, like, all the questions, the answers to the questions, like, the questions would change. And once I found drugs, I had the answers. No matter where I went, there was a group of people where I fit in. You know? And for a long time, you know, that worked for me. But what came along with that for me was that, you know, sort of like you can't serve two masters, is, you know, you know, I grew up with the belief that, you know, if I was doing these things, that I could no longer, you know, be with the Spirit. And, you know, so I began to turn and run in the other direction. And, you know, what I remember during that time is that there were times, you know, and I stayed high most of the 17 years that I used, but there would be times during that time where I would have this awakening, like, it is not supposed to be like this. You know, I wasn't raised to be wearing little outfits cut up to here and cut down to here, and being spoken to in a certain way, or, you know, people putting their hands on me, and this is not the way it's supposed to be. And I would have this horrible, painful awakening. You know, you're not supposed to be living in your car. You know, you're not supposed to be cold and hungry and tired. You know, you were from a good family and raised well, and you know, education and all these things were laid at your feet. And you know, I would have these awakenings that were horribly painful. You know, how did I get here? You know, it's not supposed to be like this. And I would have to, you know, like, use a lot to squash those feelings down. And because I knew beyond a shadow of a doubt that I was no longer worthy to ask for the kind of help that I needed to get out of those situations. you know. So a lot of years went by, and no longer did I feel a part of and worth anything. You know, I again, the substances, the drugs stopped working for me, you know. No longer did I feel a part of a group. No longer did I feel okay. No longer did I feel like, that I could fit in. And, I would use, and the awareness that I was not okay, that this was not okay, and there was no way out was really clear. And, what happened for me is that, through a treatment center, I was introduced to 12 steps. And, the first awakening that I had was in a place called Social Model Detox. And I was brought to this place, after living in my car for the better part of a year, not being employable, not welcoming my family's home. And, I walked into this place and, what I saw at first was mismatched silverware and furniture that the Salvation Army wouldn't have had. And I looked around and I said, I did not belong here. You know, I was thinking, that I was coming from my family's home where they had a three-story house with, five empty bedrooms and stewards that cooked and cleaned. And I looked around and I was the only female and I was the only person of my color, and I said, I don't belong here. And as I watched my father walk out the door, and I was like, man, I must be really bad because he's gonna leave me here. I must have done something really bad. And what happened for me, and it took a couple of days, but I realized, as I looked around at these people and said, these are a bunch of dope fiends from the street. That's who I was. I was living in my car. I was cold. I was hungry. I didn't have a job. I was not employable. And for the first time in my life, there were some people saying to me, that it doesn't have to continue to be like this. I know where you're coming from. That's where I came from. I found a place I belong. That I was a dope fiend from the street too, and what they were telling me that a minute at a time, a day at a time, that I didn't have to continue to die, this like peace came over me, and it was like, I belong here, and it was pretty awesome. And, and I got a little bit of, I don't even know that it was hope, but it was a ray of something that, maybe, just maybe. And, as I went on to a treatment center, I watched a guy come in who was about 28 years old, and he came in shackles and came in a jumpsuit, and he had shared in the group that he had spent most of his life in like juvenile delinquent centers and foster homes and prisons and he was sharing stuff like he didn't even know how to shop. He shared one day in our group that he and a couple of guys in his room had prayed, and it had been the first time that he had ever prayed, and that these guys got down with him on their knees, and he believed that there was somebody there for him. And I remember thinking, dang, if there's somebody here for him, just maybe, probably not, but maybe there's somebody there for me too. And I didn't give it a lot of thought the rest of that day. And later on that day, I went up to my room to change my shoes. It was an emergency. I don't know. I had to change my shoes. And I went up in my room, and my shoes were just a little tucked under the bed. And so, I got down on my knees to get those shoes out of my bed, and as I came up, my shoulder hit the bed table beside my bed, and this little 24-hour prayer book, you know, meditation book, fell into my hands, you know. And there I am on my knees, you know, with this book in my hands. And, you know, I don't know what he said, and I don't know what I said, but I knew beyond a shadow of a doubt at that moment that, that it was okay and that there was somebody there for me, too. I knew it, you know. And, you know, and I think that that, again, was the beginning of an awakening of my spirit that, you know, maybe, just maybe, me too. And, you know, with that little bit of hope, you know, I began to check into, you know, this thing called life that, you know, that any addict with the desire to use can find a new way of life, even me. And, you know, as I continue to stay clean, there's been periods in my recovery where, you know, where like I doubted and I wasn't sure and you know, crisis situations. Because I don't know about y'all, but this is about life and death for me. And if there isn't some hope there, and if I don't have some help, you know, I'm in trouble. And I guess I was about 6 months clean, and you know, I was praying on a regular basis, and you know, and some of the stuff that I grew up with was very helpful, and then some of it wasn't, you know. And I smoked, and I would get the feeling like I couldn't smoke and pray at the same time, that, you know, that my higher power didn't approve of that. So I had this like conditional, you know, higher power that, you know, as long as I, you know, didn't smoke and I treated people right and I didn't swear and you know, like all of that, you know, like he was cool with me. And I was like, man, I can't stay clean like that, you know. And I started sharing about that, and you know, I lived in a recovery house my first 2.5 years clean, and young lady that I lived with, you know, I shared about it in a meeting that you know, I didn't think that my higher power approved of me. And she came up to me after that meeting and she said, you know, Lisa, I don't know what kind of higher power you have. She said, but my higher power is awesome. Awesome. You know, he put you in my life. I was like, dang, you know, that's a pretty awesome higher power that thinks that that's a good thing, you know. And and I took a little piece of her higher power that day, and then I began to look around at you guys. And I began to look at, you know, people that I thought, you know, that now they were really bad, you know, and they had like these cool higher powers that, you know, did stuff and kept them clean. And I began to like do this piecemeal thing, like I want a piece of his higher power and I want a piece of her higher power. And, you know, you know, as I continued on, you know, I found one day that that I had found this higher power that worked for me, that loved me whether I smoked or not, that loved me whether I swore or not, you know, that loved me whether I told the truth or not, you know. And I knew that he loved me whether I used or not, you know, which gave me the assurity that he loves me today the same, and he loves them too. Just the same as he loves me. You know, and that's perfect. That's absolutely perfect, you know, that he loves me no matter what. Whether I use, whether I clean, whether I act ignorant. You know? And that's been an absolute gift for me. You know, along the way, you know, I've been able to is this beautiful out here or what? You know, when I first woke up this morning, and you know, it was dark outside, and you know, I'd realized that you know, that I was okay and that I'd had a good night's sleep, and there was this beautiful calm, and you know, I'd realized that I for real hadn't been up this time of morning much in a lot of years. And you know, the only other times I would see this type of time of morning is when I couldn't get to sleep, and it wasn't beautiful, and it wasn't pretty, and the sun was not a welcome sight. And you know, this morning it's you know, it's a beautiful thing. It tells me that you know, I'm alive, I'm well, I'm clean. You know, I got a good night's rest, and I'm sitting here amongst a bunch of addicts at 6:20:35 in the morning, loving life. You know, as I've stayed clean and along the path, you know, I've been able to have some awakenings, and the awakenings are only due to and through, you know, people that I've met along the way. You know, I have not had many experiences, any other experiences, you know, like the one I had at that treatment center where there, I believe there was a communion, you know, somehow, and the rest of them have been things like, you know, one addict speaking to another. And that's how I've gotten my awakenings. And, you know, another one that I was thinking about was, you know, when I was trying to figure out, okay, you know, I can't tend bar anymore. What am I going to do with my life? You know, there are people who can stay clean and do that. I wasn't one of them. And you know, the thought of getting a 9-to-5 job, becoming a productive member of society was absolutely frightening to me. You know, and I did a little temp service work for a while, and then I decided that I wanted to get an education, and I knew that that was a dream, you know, for somebody else and not me. You know, I had a long history with paperwork to follow that Lisa was not college material. You know, I had been asked to leave universities, I had quit in the middle of semesters, I had flunked out, I had, you know, been given second chances and blew those, and my accumulative GPA, you know, on a 4-point scale was a 0.6. And so all the evidence was in. You know, in fact, I've got one of those little parent tapes that, you know, that I hear my father saying, "Well, Lisa, maybe you just aren't college material." You know, and I knew that to be true. You know, but like I said, I saw the miracles working in y'all's lives around here, and so, you know, I prayed and did some footwork, and I had made an appointment with a career counselor or a financial aid counselor at a local community college, and I got up one morning in this recovery house, and you know, was going to make this appointment, and I sat down at the kitchen table, and I sat down with a pot of coffee, and I sat down with a pack of cigarettes, and you know, I probably got up at 7 o'clock in the morning, and about 9 o'clock, you know, some of my, you know, sisters from the house started waking up and coming around, and I was having, you know, one more cup of coffee and one more cigarette, and one of the girls said to me, "You know, don't you have that appointment you have to go to?" And I said, "Yeah, you know, I'm going. You know, right after this cigarette, you know, right after this cup of coffee." And you know, I don't know whether I went through how many pots of coffee or how many packs of cigarettes. And I said to her, you know, I said, "I don't know if I can do this. You know, I'm scared." And she said, "You know what? You probably can't. You know, you probably can't do this. But we can." You know, and Lil Kimmy was, you know, 4 foot nothing, and I don't know how we got there. She must have carried me. I do not remember walking, you know, and what happened is that, you know, I went to talk to this lady about, you know, asking for some financial aid, knowing I was not worthy, you know, and I started out with her something like, "You know, there's absolutely no reason you should give me any money, and I've got this horrible history in school, and I've got a 0.6, and I probably just ought to leave right now," you know. And she just grabbed me, and she put her arms around me, And she said, we're going to get you into school and we're going to get you through school. What do you want to do? You know, what do you want to do? You know, and what happened for me is that I did the footwork and I asked for help. And, you know, I've gotten an AA degree and then I got a bachelor's degree and I've just finished a master's degree. And it's all been paid for, y'all, you know. It's all been taken care of. It's all been taken care of. And it is an absolute gift, a miracle of this program. You know, I lived in my car. You know, I'm not college material, you know. But what my God and NA, you know, can do is unbelievable, you know, and I don't talk much about, really, about what I do much in meetings, but I went to school to practice medicine, and, you know, I have a friend who used to say, and here I am in black spandex, but he said, you know, when you first came in, you know, you used to be, you know, wearing nothing but black spandex, and now you're carrying a black bag, you know. And, you know, it's just a result of being in this program. And what I've been allowed to do since I've been here is I get to be, like, on the medical committee here, you know. And how amazing is that? You know, this gift that you guys have given to me, which I knew I wasn't worthy of, certainly not capable of, but, like, I get to give it back directly to NA, you know. That's amazing. You know, other awakenings that I've had along the way, you know, as a result of going to school, you know, it's taken me other places in this program and into other areas. And, you know, and it's allowed me to grow up and to realize, you know, just really, you know, what part of this, where I am in this program and what part I should be, not should be, but get to be allowed to play. You know, I went to New York and, you know, I was going to school and taking, I don't know, 34 credits in a semester, and it was crazy. And, you know, I would get to meetings on the rare occasion, like twice a week. And you know, the meetings there were 2 hours long. And I had just quit smoking. And they would, like, break in the middle of the meetings for like 20 minutes for a 5 minute smoke break, right? And I would get like huge resentments because I'd be the only one not going outside to smoke. As I recall, I was the only one sitting in the room, you know. And you know, here I am trying not to smoke and under all this stress, and I don't have time, you know, to be going to a meeting, and everybody's leaving me in the meeting here. I might as well be home. Why am I even going to a meeting? And you know, so I began to share in meetings about how you know, how it was why was it necessary for them to stop the meeting, to hold up the meeting, why they went and copped and used nicotine. You know, would they hold up the meeting for me if I was going to go cop and use some dope? You know, would they do that? And as a result, they got to know who I was. They got to know I was in the room and tell me to keep coming back, you know. And, you know, and the other thing that happened for me is that, you know, I was going to meetings for a while, and, you know, I've got to see my part, and I was coming, you know, just on time and leaving just on time. But I had realized that after going to meetings for about 3 months there, that no woman had ever come up to me in those 3 months' time and said, hi, how are you? My name is. Welcome to NA, you know. And, once that came, you know, it took me a little while. It, like, came, I was like, dang, because I remember what it was. This little 16-year-old girl who had just gotten her license, all caught up in her own world, or hadn't gotten her license, you know, came up and gave me a hug and said hello and welcome. I was like, dang, that was the first time that's happened, you know. And so I stood up and shared at that meeting and talked about the women, you know, in that area. And if I had gotten clean here, you know, y'all would have let me die. You know, y'all would have let me die. And I went home and shared to my sponsor about that, and she said, Lisa, you know, if at 10 years clean, you know, you're going to meetings to see what they can give you, reaching out see what you can get? What have you been doing for 10 years? You know, your job is to go and see what you can give. You know, so I need to remember that in NA. You know, I've been given this absolutely incredible life. And I don't get to keep it by you guys being nice to me. You know, I don't get to keep it by coming to meetings and being properly, socially engulfed in this program. You know, how I get to keep it is by giving it away. You know, I only get to keep what I have by giving it away. You know, I keep coming back to meetings on a regular basis, you know, and continue to do service work and show up at 6 o'clock in the morning, you know, because it promises me that I get to keep this if that's what I do. You know, it talks about in the basic text that, you know, that I only get to keep what I have by giving it away. I want to keep this. I've got the sweetest life of absolutely anybody that I know. And I'm one or two decisions away from losing it all. You know, if I decide that I can write prescriptions for me, boom, gone. You know, and I need to come here to be reminded of that. You know, that I'm an addict, that I am 1 minute away from using. You know, and that, you know, if I continue to show up and live this program and it a day at a time, then I get to keep this and get more of it. Y'all, you know, my drug of choice has always been more. You know, I want more happy, joyous, free spiritual awakenings. You know, I want more of this. And anyway, good morning, y'all. Thanks for letting me share.
Welcome all you early morning risers. From all us, what the hell are you doing here? At 6 o'clock in the morning, out in the cold, windy beach. Yeah. I feel blessed and honored to ask to come to share today. I didn't feel that way when they asked me. You know, I went through the whole scenario of what happened. Couldn't you get somebody else to do it? You know, you knew I wouldn't say no. You know, and I figured it'd just be a couple of scragglers from the night before. You know. But I found out otherwise. It is a glorious morning. It's beautiful out here. Ocean City brings back a lot of memories for me. I used to come here when I was a kid. And then I guess around 1970, actually, I started coming down here, you know, on my own a lot. And in high school in 1970, I came down here and I was introduced to heroin. I broke skin for the first time down here. And I guess it's when my addiction really took hold and took a hold of me, wouldn't let me go for a long time. Until I found a room to Narcotics Anonymous. I made some feeble attempts at getting clean. I think I went into my first treatment center in 1971. Back then there was no NA in the Washington metropolitan area, so we had these long-term TCs, and that's where I went. I did pretty good, you know, the whole time I was there, 2 years, 24 months. But back then things were different. Us addicts wanted to separate ourselves from alcohol. We wanted to be able to drink alcohol, and they told us we could drink, control drinking, and so that's what I did. And shortly after that, I tell you, the alcohol just woke up my addiction, and I was back doing the drugs of my choice, living the life of an addict, living the secret life for a long time. Actually, I thought I was living a secret life. You know, everybody that knew me, you know, because I'm not the kind of person that holds it well. You know what I'm saying? Like you could see me coming down the beach and know I was loaded, you know? My mannerisms change and everything, so. But I thought it was a secret, you know? I think we call it denial. I was in that for a long time. And I was introduced to Narcotics Anonymous. I had pressure from the court system. Went into one of these, as Lisa said, treatment programs. They're all nut houses, I gotta tell you, you know. I've been working in one for 14 years, and it's a nut house. You know, they're all nut houses. And so I was introduced to Narcotics Anonymous, and I tell you, I wasn't buying anything, you know, with this program I was in. It was a local hospital. I wasn't buying any of it. But then they took us to an NA meeting, and I happened to see some people that I knew from the past, people that I was locked up with, people that I used to hustle with, people I used with, and it got my attention, you know. For the first time, you know, I realized that there was something to this, you know, recovery. And I guess it was a program of attraction, you know. These people were people that used like me, because when I was first in this little place, this hospital, I kept saying, I don't know these people. It's a damn shame this hospital is convincing these people that they're drug addicts, you know, get their money. That's the kind of way I felt, you know, that they don't have a problem, you know. And if they were drug addicts, I'd know them, because I know all the drug addicts. And I've never been to the pen with any of them. But needless to say, I got a message of recovery that night, and I heard a lot of things that impressed me. Some of these people are still clean today, and they were power of examples to me. I went upstairs, you know, Lisa was talking, but I gotta tell you about Lisa. I'm gonna skip around because my brain doesn't function real well early in the morning, so please bear with me. But Lisa gave me her card the other day. It had 14 letters behind it. You know what I mean? She's got more degrees than a thermometer does. And you know where they put that. Anyway, get back to my story. You know, our awakening of the spirit, I was trying to come up with some ideas of something to say this morning. That's a scary thing for me. So I went to the dictionary, you know. Now, my brain doesn't function well, neither do my eyes. So I'm trying to read in the dictionary. It says, an awakening of the spirit. Well, I got and down, and I got of down, and I think I got the down, right? But I had to, like, look up spirit, you know. It's kind of dark, cold. And the one definition that jumped out at me was a life-giving force, you know. And as I was sitting over here today, I looked around, I looked in everybody's eyes that I could see, and that's what I felt, you know, that was out here this morning. You know, there's a life-giving force in these rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. You know, and if you're new, you know, and you're just checking us out, whatever, keep coming back. You know, you'll feel it too. Anyway, my story, I got the message of recovery through Narcotics Anonymous, and I just kind of turned around, man. I wasn't going for any of it, and I wanted all of it, you know. I got hungry for this program, and I guess in reality, I was dying, and I knew it. I knew my addiction and my disease. I didn't know it was a disease at the time, but I knew I was always sick, you know, because people that did the things that I did were not well. I at least knew that much, you know, in these rooms, you know, they woke up a life-giving force in me. I'm going to jump around a little bit, so I'm a little distracted, but I would tell you a story. Let me finish my story, thanks. What is my name? Where am I? Anyway, I was in this treatment, this hospital, detox, and I had been using the first 2 weeks I was there. I had gotten out of jail for prescription forgery, and because I thought I was a doctor, you know. I took the short course, now unlike Lisa, you know. I took the short course and learned a little Latin. Learn how to borrow physicians' prescription papers, write my own stuff. But anyway, I got out of jail, and I was doing the same thing inpatient, writing the prescription, having my girlfriend come up and pick up the paper and go cash and bring me the drugs back. And, you know, I saw a psychiatrist one day. He said, man, your eyes are still pinned. And I said, well, doctor, my eyes have been pinned for a long, long time. They're going to take a long, long time to come back. And I knew when I left his office there in the hospital that they were going to give me a urine test, so I took care of that, you know, like we know how to do so well. So I beat the urine test a couple times. But something changed, you know. After this meeting that they took us to, I got up, I left the meeting because I heard somebody saying, you know, that they got on their hands and knees and prayed. And I did it. You know, I went upstairs in the bathroom so none of my roommates would see me on my knees. You know, got down in the bathroom and I asked for help. And believe me, I don't know who I was asking or what I was asking, but That's what I heard somebody do, say that, that's what worked for them at the meeting that night. And I knew this person, I used with him, and, you know, he had been clean for a while. And I did that. I got down on my hands and knees, and I felt something come over me, and I got up, and I took out the drugs, and I flushed them down the toilet. And the feeling that I felt was everything was going to be all right, you know. I was like, wow, this is awesome. But the next morning, I woke up sick. And I said to myself, oh, what in the hell did you do now? You threw your drugs away? Are you crazy? Are you crazy? And I had to get down on my hands and knees again. And I got that feeling one more time that everything was going to be all right, you know, no matter what. So about the time I was supposed to get out of this place, I was in withdrawal, you know. But it was okay because I got a few simple suggestions, and that was go to a meeting every day, get a sponsor, pray, don't use no matter what, keep coming back. And that was some time ago. I'm working on my 15th year. I still pray a lot. I got to tell you a story I haven't shared. I was just thinking of it. I was here a month. I fish a lot. And I do get up early in the morning, believe it or not. I was out there in the wind and rain yesterday morning. And this is my passion, you know. And it's one of the gifts that this program has given me is pursuing my passions, and it's one of the things I love to do. But I was up on the jetty up there at the inlet, and I was at the jetty last month, and I do, when I'm down here, I do this 11-step prayer, you know, prayer and meditation thing, kind of my own little thing I made up, ritual that I do. And I went out on the jetty, and I don't know if y'all are familiar with the jetty out there on the inlet, but it's really dangerous out there. The rocks are wet and green and slippery, and the surf smashes in on the rocks. It's dangerous. And I go out as far as I can, and I sit there, and I go through my prayers, and I came to the part where it said, you know, I pray for the knowledge of God's will and the power to carry that out. And I had heard some people behind me, you know, and right after I said that prayer, I heard a scream. And I looked over, and this guy was there with his kids, his wife and kids, and I guess he didn't realize how slippery the rocks were. And he walked out on the rocks and wiped out. And he was down in the rocks, bloody. I mean, yeah, it was a dangerous, dangerous situation. And it scared me. Down there, and I said to him, look, man, I'm going to help you, but you got to do everything I say. You know, and he looked at me with desperate eyes, you know, and he said, okay. And I said, if you don't, you're going to kill both of us. And you know, he followed everything I said to do, and we got out of his rocks, you know, and he was in pretty bad shape. His family took him, I guess they took him to get patched up, but it's funny that, you know, I'm praying for this. I'm praying for the knowledge of God's will and power to carry it out, and, you know, and that happens. But what I was thinking, you know, and we have a disease that tells us we don't have it, you know. And I bet that guy, I bet he doesn't have a disease of slippery rock where he's going to go back to that inlet on those jetties and see if they're slippery again, you know, and slam his ass down on those rocks like my disease had me slamming my ass down all those years, you know. And, you know, but that's what we got, you know. I try to reach out to the newcomer all the time, and, you know, once in a while, you know, I get a newcomer's attention, you know, and I look in his eyes and I'll see those eyes of desperation, you know. And this program has given me the ability to help people, and that's what I try to do, make myself available for the suffering addict. But anyway, I think that's about all I got. Thanks for loving Cher.
That's it. Please remember to pick up whatever trash you have. And